loads of chapters and, you know, like loads of scripture focused on these various different themes. And the one that I want to focus on today is faith. And it's one that you find significant with the Israelites in the Old Testament, but you also find it very significant with Jesus and the disciples, right? There are just loads of stories that basically the point is them being that they should be a people of faith, that they believe in God, that they trust in God in such a way that's beyond the natural world. And because of that, that God works in them and through them in some significant ways. Hebrews 11:6 says it this way, "And without faith, it is impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him." And what I find is that times when my faith is high, those times in my life when that happens, when, because faith isn't static. You don't just have faith or you don't have faith, right? Faith is something that can come and go. And at the times when my faith has been at its strongest, those are precious times. When you're in a moment and you feel like you're just so overwhelmed with the presence of God, you're just so aware that God's there in a moment like that. I've had moments like that where I've thought, I don't want to be anywhere else. I don't want to leave this moment. If I could stay here, I would, right? And so the challenge to faith, although it's a challenge for us, is also a good one because it's good for us. Because the more that we are a people of faith, it's better for us. It's better for the way that we witness to God's kingdom. It's better for others. It's better in so many different ways. Now, I want to just kind of in getting us to start thinking about this first before I take us into some stories in the Old Testament. I want to start with a story from a few years back when I was doing some stuff with youth and I was a little bit surprised by what God did, okay? Now, I don't know if you've ever been around when there's something, I would almost call it revival, when it's like the Spirit of God is working in a place in such a way that everybody's faith is just raised, right? And it's fantastic when that happens. And there's been, you know, there's only so many times when I could point in my life when I've seen this in really significant ways. And one of them was a youth weekend with 14 to 18-year-olds. And this was back at my previous church. This was, you know, 8 years ago, something like that. And when I was at that church, we used to do weekends, one every term. So we did loads of these weekends, as well as, you know, going to Soul Survivor in the summer and, you know, that sort of thing. And so we'd have these regular times, and yet they were significant, right? But then there was this one weekend where all of a sudden it was just like the wheels came off the bus. You know what I mean? It was just, it was different. It was the sort of thing where you know when you're supposed to finish the worship time, but it just keeps going and keeps going and keeps going and nobody wants it to stop. When you look out on the room and realize that no one's leading worship anymore and yet the worship continues and you've got people praying in clusters and groups all over the place, prayer happening. You've got people that you know are, you know, I remember this girl, she was so, her heart was really, really hard because of what she'd gone through in her life. I'd known her already for years, nothing, okay? She just, like, that's just who she was, and yet she was in floods of tears as God was breaking through in a whole new way in her life. And I'm looking out on stuff like that, like loads of examples of things like that, and just realizing in that moment that God's working in a way that I could never do. Like all my effort wouldn't accomplish this, and yet there's more happening in the room that I would want to have happen. Do you see what I mean? And it's all, God's doing all of it, right? It's fantastic to be in a moment like that. And every now and then it happens. Now there's something, this is just in a separate thing to this. That weekend was incredibly powerful. Following the weekend, a few months later, we had a weekend with 11 to 13-year-olds. And I remember before that weekend actually having a parents' evening with parents of 11-year-olds. And I was talking about the kind of spiritual life of an 11-year-old. And I was saying, well, it's not like it is when you're older, right? I mean, let's just be honest. It's just not like it is when you're older. They're not as sensitive. This is just what I've seen over the years. And I was just saying, you know, that's kind of just the way it is when you're 11 versus, you know, when you're older. And then we got to this weekend with 11 to 13-year-olds, and I was absolutely baffled because the same thing happened. Because all of a sudden, again, every worship time was passionate, was overflowing. There's prayer happening. There's tears. There's joy. There's just this overwhelming sense of God's presence. And there was a series of weekends at that church where that happened several times. It didn't happen forever. I don't think it still happens in that same way. There was just a season where God decided to show up in really special ways. And it was incredibly significant. Now, let me just get you for a moment to share with somebody around you if you want to. Now, this is a big question. And if you say to the person, you know, I don't know, that's fine, okay? But at the same time, if you have an example that you can share with somebody, go for it. And my question is this. Can you think of a time when your faith was raised? What was it? Like, what caused it? What happened? Can you think of any time when you've gone, it was on a different level than it would be normally, and why was that? It's encouraging to share that sort of thing with each other. Just turn to someone near you. If you've got something to share, great. If not, just say, I don't know, and that's fine, okay? But we'll just take a minute. Go for it. Cool. I'll pull us back together. I realize with that sort of thing, to share stories with each other can be incredibly powerful. And yet, so for some of our groups, it might have been like, wow, this is significant. And for some of the other groups, maybe you're both looking at each other going, oh, I don't know. But anyways, what we want to do this evening is I want to take you into three stories that happened with the Israelites, each that are significant on this theme of faith in slightly different ways, okay? And I think ideally, what you could almost do is you could almost in your imagination kind of put yourself in the story and learn more from it than I'll naturally give to it with words. I mean, there's something about preaching sometimes that can reduce these stories that are actually incredibly profound. I need to make them clear, make them make sense, but the process of doing that sometimes misses just how fantastic these stories are. And so I'd encourage you to just prayerfully kind of to get more from them perhaps than I'm going to give you, okay? The first story comes from Numbers chapter 13. And essentially to me, this is thinking about faith in such a way that's forward-looking, that has optimism regarding what God is able to do, okay? And the story goes that Moses sends out one person from each tribe of Israel to scout the promised land. And his instructions come up in Numbers chapter 13. And I'm going to read from verse 17. And you'll see loads of details he's asking. God's told them to take the promised land. They know very little about it, right? And so Numbers 13 from verse 17, it says this. When Moses sent them to explore Canaan, he said, go up through the Negev and on into the hill country. See what the land is like and whether the people who live there are strong or weak, few or many. What kind of land do they live in? Is it good or bad? What kind of towns do they live in? Are they unwalled or fortified? How is the soil? Is it fertile or poor? Are there trees in it or not? Do your best to bring back some of the fruit of the land. And we're told in parentheses in the NIV, it says, it was the season for the first ripe grapes. Okay? I kind of get from the end of that, it sounds like that Moses wants a positive report. Bring me back some, and he wants some grapes, okay? Bring me back some grapes. And at the end of chapter 13, we get these 12 returning from this scouting the land. 10 of them give a fearful report. Joshua and Caleb give a positive report. Now, what I want you to see from this is the difference between fear and faith. How some 10 of them, their report is from fear, and 2 of them, the report essentially is from faith, and how fear and faith affects how we see a situation, okay? So notice this. Let me pick out the quotes from verses 31 to 33 that they say when they come back, the 10 that are reporting from fear. They say, we can't attack those people. They are stronger than we are. They say in verse 32, the land we explored devours those living in it. I love that. Like, what kind of land does that? What is this? You know, and later in verse 32, all the people we saw there are of great size. We saw the Nephilim there. We seemed like grasshoppers in our own eyes, and we looked the same to them. Okay? That's a report from fear. But then notice Caleb's report from faith, which comes in verse 30. See, already I imagine Caleb can sense the atmosphere among all of the different people. And so he sort of speaks up and gets everyone's attention and says, "We should go up and take possession of the land, for we can certainly do it." Now, think about this. It's safer to operate from fear, but it's far less exciting and it gets far less done, right? Like you can imagine all sorts of different scenarios of how this plays out. One of the obvious ones is, and this wouldn't be hard to imagine, is the idea of knowing someone who's got well-formed walls against Christianity. And so the question is, do you talk to them about Jesus? Well, the response from fear is to play it safe, to not offend them. You'll just make them upset. There's no way they'll have better arguments than you do. You know what I mean? The response from fear, you could have all sorts of things that you might say. The response from faith has an optimism that God can change even the hardest heart. Now, I'm personally grateful that some people in my life operated in faith. My coming to Christ would have seemed ridiculous at the time, no question, until it actually happened, right? So Caleb and Joshua have an optimism regarding what God can do. And because of that, they can see what God is able to do in regard to the promised land. Now, let me just say, I don't know about you, but I don't think I'm optimistic by nature, okay? I think the optimism of a child got knocked out of me at an early age. I mean, like, you know, I don't think I'm optimistic by nature, but in regard to what God can do, we need to be able to be optimistic, to know that God is able, to see what's possible. John Birchall's away on holiday, so I'll go ahead and say this. I think I would if he was here anyways. But, you know, I'm glad, if I'm honest with you, that I wasn't leading us through Christ Church Renewed. Okay? Because when John B. said that we were going to raise £1 million, I thought he was crazy. Left to me, we probably would have bought some used carpet and the church would be condemned or useless in like 10 years. A project this big requires faith. This morning when we were setting up for church and such, there was a little girl, not very old, and she yelled out, and I thought it was kind of a funny thing that she yelled out. She yelled out, "There's nothing I can't do," okay? And I don't think it was like, she wasn't saying to her mom, like, "I'm rebellious and I'm a morally reprehensible child." She was saying in a positive way, like, "I'm capable of anything," right? And and you might think that Caleb had some sort of youthful optimism. We can take the land. But what we find here is that actually, if you look into it, Caleb was 40 at the time. Good man, all right? And not only that, but if you fast forward to Joshua 14, verses 10 to 12, we get Caleb as this sort of cantankerous old man who's ready for a fight. He's still full of faith. And I hope when I'm this age that I've got the same heart. Check this out. Verse 10. "Now then, just as the Lord promised, he has kept me alive for 45 years since the time he said this to Moses while Israel moved about in the wilderness. So here I am today, 85 years old. I'm still as strong today as the day Moses sent me out. I'm just as vigorous to go out to battle now as I was then. Now give me this hill country that the Lord promised me that day. You yourself heard that the Anakites were there and their cities were large and fortified. But the Lord helping me, I will drive them out just as he said." I love that. 85 years old, and he's still like, you know what? I'll do it by myself. You know what I mean? Like, full of faith. See, we've got a choice to operate from faith or from fear. And the hope would be that we could have a faith that is optimistic about what God is able to do. The second story I want to pick up on comes from Joshua chapter 3. And this challenges us to be able to step out in faith, like literally, okay? And here what we get is we get the nation of Israel are about to cross the Jordan River. Now, you'll remember, obviously, they've crossed the Red Sea before, which is a bigger deal than the Jordan River. But there's something very unusual about how they're going to cross the Jordan River. By the way, the fact that they're going to cross the Jordan River is going to send terror into all the nations that are around them. Okay? Like, this is a big deal. And so, in Joshua 3, verse 13, Joshua says what's going to happen. We read this. And as soon as the priests who carry the ark of the Lord of all the earth, set foot in the Jordan, its waters flowing downstream will be cut off and stand up in a heap. Now, what's odd about this is the way this plan is going to work itself out. You see, it's not Joshua standing off at a distance. Just imagine you're one of these priests, okay? You're carrying the Ark of the Covenant. We've already talked about that before. That's a big deal, right? You're carrying the Ark of the Covenant on these long poles, and you're supposed to step into the Jordan. Now, more than that, we're told in verse 15 that it was flood season. We're also mentioned, even in verse 13 there, that the water's flowing downstream. Actually, with the Jordan River, it's got an incredibly steep incline. So when it's not harvest season, it's not much of a river. When it is harvest season, it can become as wide as 150 feet wide and 10 or 20 feet deep. And because of the incline, just stepping, the current is incredibly strong. So stepping into the water can actually sweep you away. So it can be dangerous. Now imagine you're one of those priests. You're carrying the Ark of the Covenant. And you're told that you need to, you're the first one, right? You're told that you need to step into the Jordan River because when you step in, it's going to stand in a heap. I love that, right? Like, now, notice something for a moment. The first story we looked at challenges us in regard to faith in what we believe God can do. This, to me, goes a level deeper. Because it's one thing to believe that God is able to put the water up in a heap, which would be tough enough. It's another thing to act on it, right? And so as the priests step into the water, that's exactly what happens. The water piles up in a heap. They then walk to the middle of the river. They're standing on dry ground, and they wait there while the entire nation of Israel passes by. Now, by the way, that's we're told when they were leaving Israel, leaving Egypt, that there was 600,000 men plus women and children. Like, however, whatever number that is, it's a lot of people. They're there for a long time, okay? Now, John Ortberg calls this the law of the first step. That's where the title for this sermon came from. And the law of the first step goes like this, that God essentially is most honored when we trust him so much that we're willing to step out in faith. That sometimes we need to step out and do what's right, knowing that God will come to our aid. It's things like David as a young man, when all the Israelites are cowering in fear regarding Goliath, and when he steps up to fight Goliath. Everyone else is so scared, it seems like they almost push him out onto the battlefield. And yet David says, you come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. And he steps up in faith. The law of the first step is exciting. It's where we step out in faith, knowing that what we're doing is right and looking as we fall for God to catch us. It's when you try to help in a situation not knowing if you'll have that you'll have what's required of you or what's needed to help in the situation. It's when you open your mouth to share Christ with someone though you feel like you have nothing to say. It's faith in action. Now notice this. I think this is we know things on different levels, right? And I hope you're aware of this. It's the sort of thing like we on the kind of most surface level is a sort of I know something if you say it, right? Like, I don't, you know, like if you say something, I go, oh yeah, I know that. There's another level of knowledge that's deeper than that. That's like, I know something and I can tell you about it. Like, I can reproduce it. But then there's a whole nother level, and that's, I know something and I can live it. And so we first need an optimism about what God can do, but secondly, we need to be able to step out in faith. Like the priest, we need to be able to step into the water. The third story that connects with this theme of faith is when it comes up in Joshua chapter 5. And sorry if it's a little bit blunt. This story essentially challenges us at the level of our convictions. See, in Joshua chapter 5, verse 1, we get this. Now, when all the Amorite kings west of the Jordan, all the Canaanite kings along the coast, heard how the Lord had dried up the Jordan, I mentioned this, before the Israelites until they had crossed over, their hearts melted in fear, and they no longer had the courage to face the Israelites. Now, notice something right here in our story. They've crossed the Jordan. However, they are now in enemy territory, okay? They know at some point they're going to have to fight. There are these nations surrounding them that they are already afraid of because they think they're bigger and stronger and more, you know, numerous and fortified and they're giants and, okay? That's the point in the story that we're at. And yet then we get verse 2. At that time, the Lord said to Joshua, make flint knives and circumcise the Israelites again. Okay, now. First of all, flint knives, right? I mean, like, I'm sure this is an incredibly painful procedure, but flint knives, that's like where you make a knife out of a rock, right? Okay. Fine. And it goes on to explain that they hadn't been circumcised, that the men of Israel, that no one had been circumcised since they left Egypt 40 years earlier. They had a lot of time in those 40 years. They barely got anywhere. Just a little forward planning might have been a good idea. And yet, Joshua knows that if they're to honor God in what they're facing, that they should be circumcised. So this whole generation needs to be circumcised. They don't phase this in. They do what's right. Now, I don't know how long it takes to recover from this sort of procedure. Especially back then, I'd rather not look it up, okay? But catch this. Their first action in crossing the Jordan River was to set up a monument. Their second action, when they could come under attack, is to disable their entire army. Sometimes faith means that we do what is right in trusting the consequences to God. You see, again, I think this hits us at the level of our convictions. It means being honest, even if it might cost you dearly. It means having integrity as a Christian, even if it might cost you that promotion or even your job or that relationship, that we go, do you know what? I'm going to honor God. And the consequences, the results, I'm going to have to trust that to God. The finances, the whatever it is. You know what, God? I've got the faith to honor you by doing what is right. And so the entire nation of Israel consecrate themselves and the men are circumcised. Now put these three together and hopefully it's a deep challenge toward faith for us in some different ways. And I don't know what way connects most with you. If you just need to work on your thinking, like, do you have an optimism regarding what God is able to do? I mean, maybe you need to prayerfully dig into that and go and have your faith level raised. Or maybe it's about putting your faith into action. Maybe it's about saying, God, can you, will you, in this week, will you give me some ways where I can watch for what you want me to do and I can step out and do the right thing, knowing that you'll help me? Or maybe it's in this third way, at the level of our convictions, that we've got something we know we need to do what's right, even though we might have to trust the consequences to God. You see, often we want to blame our circumstances for what we do. We want to say things like, God, give me lots of money and then I'll be generous. Or God, give me extra time and then I'll study the Bible. Give me confidence and then I'll share Christ with others. And yet God wants us to be a people full of faith that act on his behalf like we were Joshua or Caleb among the initial 12, like we were one of those priests carrying the Ark of the Covenant, like we were Joshua leading an army in the Promised Land. Let's be a people of faith. Let me take a moment to pray. Father, thank you for the ways that you've challenged your people over the centuries, of which this is just a small part. And I pray that you would help us to be a people of faith. Father, I pray that we would even personally have ways that we're aware of what you want to do with what we've looked at tonight in our lives. Father, I pray as well that you'd give us, from experiences we've had in the past with you, clear direction as to how we can raise the level of our faith. And I pray that you'd bless us, that we might be a blessing. In Jesus' name, amen.